Hi everyone, Francis here. Just a quick note to say that after 6 months of nonstop weekly podcast episodes, we're going to take a mid-year break here at the Story Guild. We'll be back on July 7th with a new episode of Forget Me Not, and in the meantime, to help you get through to the other side, we've got a treat. On July 1st, for Story Guild members only, we're going to release the first 25 chapters of Forget Me Not as an audiobook. This means no intros or thank you for listenings, just chapters. Look for a link in your inbox and do let us know if you have any problems accessing it. As always, you'll have access to Friendship Album 1933, the Friendship Album Stories, and Aunt Jane of Kentucky. Thank you for being a member of Story Guild. I hope you're enjoying your time here in Milton Falls. I know I am. And now, on with today's episode. Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work-in-progress Friendship Album 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 26. It had been forever since Eula fried a chicken this early in the morning. It must have been back when they attended the county fair in Medina at the end of every summer. Medina hadn't been their home county, not since they bought their farm in 1907, but it was where their families gathered, and going to the fair was a reunion of sorts. Eula, Dan, and the boys set up camp for 3 days on Mallet Creek, driving the wagon each morning to the fairgrounds. Invitations to stay at this brother's or that sister's house were always on offer, but the family liked their quiet campsite after a full day's adventure at the crowded, colorful fairgrounds. As she carefully lowered a battered chicken leg into the popping hot oil, Eula wondered if they should go home for the fair this year. Lord knows Maisie would love it. Just watching her watch the fireworks would make it worth the trip. One trip at a time, Eula counseled herself. Funny to think that this would be the longest ride of her life, 150 miles from here to Akron, at least 4 hours, maybe longer. Dan had studied the maps, talked it over with folks he knew who had taken the same route, and he had reason to believe the roads would be mostly good. He'd put new tires on the truck back in March and knew the vehicle well enough to anticipate what problems might arise and plan accordingly. "A truck will never be as beautiful as a horse," he'd said at supper the night before, "but the way it works is a lot less mysterious." They planned to leave at 6 and arrive at Martin's house by noon. Eula was preparing lunch with a thought toward everyone sitting down at a table together, but she was bringing an old quilt with her just in case the trip took longer than Dan thought it would, and they ended up eating a side-of-the-road picnic. "Aunt Eula, is it time to go yet?" A sleepy-eyed Maisie was suddenly standing in the doorway. She was still wearing her nightgown, and Eula wasn't sure she was all the way awake. Might could be she was sleepwalking. "Go back to bed," she urged the girl. "You don't need to be up for another hour." "But I'm up now," Maisie insisted, her voice growing stronger. "I'll get dressed and help you get ready." She was back in no time. "What do you want me to do?" "Well, when it gets light outside, you could go pick some tomatoes. I thought we'd take some to your dad, along with some squash." "We sure have got a lot of squash." "We've got more squash than we know what to do with," Eula agreed. "Pick some beans, too, when you go out there." "I ought to just pick everything that's ripe," Maisie said. "Otherwise, it'll go to waste." "Elise said she'd take care of it while we're gone. but things will be ripening all week, so grab anything that won't get squashed on the way there. Tomatoes are pretty likely to get squashed. Eula smiled. We'll put them on the top of the heap. In fact, I'm going to put you in charge of keeping the tomatoes safe while we drive. I am up to the task, Aunt Eula, Macy said, chin lifted. For now, I'll get picking. You're not to pick anything until it's light outside. Snakes move around in the dark, which is one reason humans shouldn't. You can help me right now by fetching some boxes and old quilts from the attic and packing up dishes in case we end up pulling off the road to eat. A trip, Eula thought. Not only had it been a long time since she'd fried a chicken before dawn, it had been a long time since she'd been anywhere other than back home. Leaving a house in town was different than leaving the farm. It made her feel a little nervous, truth be told. Elise had promised to come over and check on things, tend to the garden, and walk through the rooms just in case something from the outside had gotten into the inside. Rainwater, mice, ants. Mother, you're getting yourself bothered over nothing. Matt had laughed at supper Sunday night, after Eula had ticked off all the things she wanted Elise to keep an eye out for. Dad's fixed up that house so tight that a gnat couldn't find its way in, much less a mouse. You never know, Eula replied. Bess has neighbors that went to Cincinnati to visit family, and when they got back, a pack of possums had taken up residence in their parlor. Now that's something I'd like to see, Macy said. I wonder how many of them got in. One is more than enough, Eula said. I don't want to come home to find possums, raccoons, rabbits, or any kind of critter inside my house. Elise was quiet during the discussion, which made Eula worry, even though, by and large, her daughter-in-law appeared to be coming along. She seemed to enjoy being in the company of others and was eager to attend the Wednesday Bee. That, for the time being, had become the Thursday Bee so that Dorothy could attend. Eula noticed that Elise especially liked to hear Dorothy's stories about working for Nina Tarkington. I sure feel a whole lot better about the state of my pies now, she told Dorothy at the last bee. Dorothy had just finished recounting Nina's latest baking disaster, in which her blueberry pie had bubbled up and over and started a small fire in the oven. She took a bite of the pie after we pulled it out of the oven, burnt to a crisp, mind you, and said that maybe she'd send a recipe for smoked blueberry pie to the Ladies' Home Journal. Dorothy told the group. I think that's why I like working over there. Mrs. Tarkington doesn't let a thing in the world bring her down. I could go bake with her, Elise offered. I can tell her about all the mistakes I've made so she can avoid making them herself. Everyone had agreed that was a marvelous idea, and Eula hoped the girl would follow through. It would be good for her to make friends with other young women the way she had with Florence. Before the baby was born, Elise had been slowly getting to know some women her age at church, but she hadn't been to church since May. Thinking about it now as she pulled the chicken from the frying pan and put it on a plate, Eula decided that after they got back from Akron, she'd make a point of getting Elise back in the pews. That's where she'd find people such as herself, young farm wives with babies, women who understood what it was like to work sun up to sun down, to cook your first meal at 5 a.m. and wash your last dish at 7 p.m. Friendships with folks who lived lives different from your own were important, as Eula herself had learned in the last year. But sometimes it was good to be around people who understood what it was like to serve a meal that you'd not only made yourself, but raised yourself. It was good to be around people who'd watched the hailstones pummel their crops and helped piglets get born. It was a good life and a hard life. It was a life you needed to talk about with other farmers' wives over a cup of coffee and a piece of chocolate cake, or over a quilting frame. They'd planned for every sort of emergency and then didn't face a single one. Well, not unless you counted the untimely deaths of two beautiful beefsteak tomatoes that rolled out of Maisie's basket when she hopped from the truck at Martin's house. Eula supposed that calling their loss an emergency might be overstating the case, but it sure was a shame to lose them. "We'll fill up a bucket with water and wash that mess to the curb," Eula told her niece, who stood shaking her head over what remained of the ripe red fruit. "Better those tomatoes than one of the truck's tires," Dan said in a voice clearly intended to cheer Maisie up. "I suppose so," Maisie replied. "I don't know how I lost control of them. I guess I was so excited to see my daddy that I just forgot they were there." "Can't blame you." Dan put a consoling arm around Maisie's shoulder. "Did you know that Martin was always my favorite brother? That's probably because he was the youngest and the easiest to boss around." Maisie laughed and seemed on the verge of making a reply when the front door opened and a woman walked out calling, "Well, hello there! Maisie, is that you?" Eula had been busy pulling the picnic things out of the truck bed, but now she looked up to see a plump and pretty middle-aged woman coming down the porch steps toward them. Her appearance seemed at odds with the house, which had a pinched look about it, like it had taken a breath and neglected to let it out. Before she reached them, Martin came out of the house and waved, almost like he was trying to draw attention away from the woman and toward himself. "Hey now, you're right on time." Dan was the oldest Barker boy, and Martin was the youngest. But while 15 years separated them, you would never know it by appearances. There was an energy to Dan, Eula thought, an optimism that informed his every gesture and word. Martin, on the other hand, looked diminished by the events of recent years, the death of his wife, the dispersal of his children to other households. Martin looked hollowed out, while Dan looked filled up. But Eula had to admit that Martin was looking a touch more sprightly than when they'd seen him at Christmas, and she wondered if the credit went to this woman standing before them. Maisie ran past the woman and up the steps to throw her arms around her father. "I can't ever get used to you living in this house and not our house," she said, her voice muffled against her father's shirt. "This house don't look like you." "It's a fine house," Martin insisted. "Keeps me warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and that's all a man can ask for." "Martin, are you going to introduce us to your friend?" Dan asked, sounding bemused and a little put out at the same time. "I didn't know you'd have company."
"Oh, I'm not company," the woman exclaimed. "Me and Martin."
Martin finished the sentence for her. "She's my wife. Dan and Eula, meet Beverly."
"Oh, call me Bev, won't you?" she asked, sticking out her hand in Dan's direction. "Everybody does."
After shaking hands with Dan and Eula, Bev turned to Maisie, kneeling down so they were the same height.
"And you must be little Maisie." "Well, little Maisie, I guess I'm your new mama."
Eula stiffened, waiting for Maisie's outburst. But, to her surprise, the girl remained calm in the face of this new information.
"I don't believe you are," Maisie informed Bev. "I don't want a new mama, and I don't require one either. But thank you for the offer."
Bev laughed.
"Well, you sure are welcome, honey."
She stood and reached for the picnic basket that Eula was carrying.
"Martin told me you'd be bringing food and that I shouldn't bother to cook a thing. Between me and you, I can't cook worth a darn anyway. Martin didn't marry me for my culinary skills, if you catch my drift."
"Well, I'm sure he had good reason to marry you all the same," Eula managed to get out.
Good Lord, she didn't know what to make of this woman. She sure was friendly, and Eula appreciated that she hadn't pushed that whole "I'm your new mama" business. That would have spoiled any chance she'd have of making friends with Maisie. Not that Eula thought there was much chance of that, but still. 10 minutes later, they were sitting at the kitchen table, Eula's feast laid out before them, elbows and knees bumping. In the short time that had transpired, the guests had learned all sorts of things about Martin's new wife. Bev was from Akron, a city girl through and through, as she put it, and she and Martin had met at the Corning plant, where he worked on the line and she worked as a secretary. "We met in March and were married in May. Isn't that the most romantic thing you ever heard?" Bev asked. Dan turned to his brother. "So, were you going to mention this at some point? You could have written us a letter." "Heck, we would have come to the wedding if you'd given us some advance notice." "It all happened kind of fast," Martin admitted, "and things have been awful busy. You wouldn't know there was a depression going on the way they've got us working." "I think you're leaving out some important information, Marty," Bev chided her husband. She turned to her guests. "We're having a baby in December. I know, I'm hardly showing, but that's how it is with women in my family." Eula quickly did the math. A baby due in December would have been conceived in March, most likely. So, in Martin and Bev's case, a month or two prior to their May wedding. "Congratulations," she managed to get out. "A baby is always good news." Glancing at Martin, she wondered if he agreed with her. His expression suggested otherwise. Bev then went into a lengthy explanation of her plans. For the baby's layette, for the nursery. "This house may look small on the outside, but it's got 3 bedrooms, she'd exclaimed. Plans for what she would do once the baby was born and she was no longer working. She discussed possible baby names and how she hoped the baby was a boy because a boy was preferable, no offense to the ladies at the table. From time to time, Eula would glance at Maisie to see how she was taking the news of the baby, who would be her half-brother or sister, no matter whether or not she called Bev Mama. Maisie kept her eyes focused on her plate and stayed quiet throughout the meal. Eula longed to reach out and pat her back, but she knew Maisie wouldn't care for it, and so she refrained. "Eula, would you be so kind to cut this beautiful cake you brought?" Bev asked after the lunch plates had been cleared from the table. "While we're eating it, there's something Martin and I would like to talk to you about." "They want Maisie back," Eula thought as she began slicing pieces of cake and putting them on pretty little plates that Bev must have brought to the marriage. "They're going to ask us to pack her things and mail them." The more Eula considered this, the more numb she felt. She couldn't bear to think about their house without Maisie in it, how quiet it would be, how much less interesting their days would become. Eula had a tendency to roll her eyes when Maisie thought up a new money-making scheme or found yet another excuse she needed to stay home instead of go to school. But really, she'd been amazed by the girl's ambition and her creative imagination. Maisie was the kind of person who made you want to get up in the morning just to see what ideas she'd come up with overnight. Eula took as long as she could to arrange the slices of cake neatly on their little plates and make coffee and get it poured and on the table. Sitting back down, she closed her eyes and breathed in deeply. "I can get through this," she thought. "Me and Dan have survived worse." But had they? Really? Eula wasn't quite so sure. "Oh, Eula, this cake is divine," Bev exclaimed after her first bite. "I want the recipe. Not that I can bake either, but I guess I better learn how if I want to keep my husband happy. Isn't that right, Martin?" Martin nodded mutely. Was he worried that Dan would resist him reclaiming Maisie? that Dan would argue the girl was better off in Milton Falls, where she was doing well in school and had a good group of friends. That it was unfair to make her start over, even if it meant being closer to her family. "So let me tell you what Martin and I have been thinking," Bev continued, and Eula held her breath, waiting for the bad news. "We've been thinking that Maisie should stay with you. Not only that, we think you should adopt her."
Eula's eyes went wide. "You want us to adopt Maisie?"
"It would solve all sorts of problems if you would," Bev said. "Martin and I would like to have at least 3 children, and while the house feels big now, it won't when there are 3 little ones running about. Besides, it will confuse the baby if Maisie's here, don't you think?"
"How so?" Dan asked, his voice flat.
"They'll wonder why Martin is Maisie's father and I'm not her mother."
Bev turned to Maisie.
"I think you're the one who pointed out that I'm not your mother. Made it very clear, as a matter of fact."
Dan stood. "Maisie, Eula, why don't you go ahead and get in the truck? We'll be leaving in just a minute, but I'd like to have a few words with my brother before we do." Maisie stood and headed out of the kitchen, but stopped at the door. Turning to Bev, she said,
"A good mother wouldn't have done what you just did. I feel sorry for that baby you're having."
She paused and then added,
"By the way, I'm real good at math." "What do you mean by that?"
Bev asked, her face reddening, but Maisie was already out of the kitchen and headed out the front door.
"What on earth do you mean by that?"
"It means she can subtract 9 from 12 and know that the answer's not May," Eula told her. "But understand, when I say that you ought to be ashamed of yourself, I'm not talking about when that baby got made." She turned to Martin. "You ought to be twice as ashamed. 3 times. I know I'm ashamed for you." Sitting in the truck, Eula could hear Dan's voice getting louder by the second. She put an arm around Maisie. "When Uncle Dan gets back, we'll go visit your brothers and sister. How about that?" Maisie shook her head.
"I want to go home," she said, "and I don't ever want to come back to this town again."
Eula squeezed the girl tight. "Me and Uncle Dan, we're your home, and we'll never let you go. You'll always be a part of us. You hear me?" Maisie nodded and let her head fall onto Eula's shoulder. Eula sat as still as she could. She had every kind of emotion whirling around inside of her, from sorrow to rage to a happiness she felt like she shouldn't be feeling but couldn't help herself. Maisie was hers. She was theirs. Eula wouldn't have to let her go.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.